Hello and welcome to another episode of Zawani's Reframed podcast. Today we will explore the fascinating realm of artificial intelligence, or AI, and unpack the Christian perspective on the topic. I, Paul Kim, am your host today, and we have the pleasure of delving into the subject with two remarkable minds. From the vibrant nation of Kenya, we have Shiko Gitau, and from the rainbow nation of South Africa, JP Harper. Dr. Shiko Gitau is a Kenyan computer scientist. She finished her undergrad studies in computer science at the Africa Nazarene University and obtained her PhD at University of Cape Town. JP Harper is a senior lecturer at George Whitfield College, a senior software engineer, and has his doctorate in philosophy, as well as a postgraduate degree in theology, both from the University of Stellenbosch. Together, we will try to unravel some of the thinking around AI and its intersection with our Christian faith, exploring its potential, its dangers, and ethical considerations. So get ready to be inspired, challenged, and enlightened as we reframe AI in the light of faith.
Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Morning, Shiko and JP. Welcome to the Reframe podcast, and thank you for being here. As we get going, can you give us a quick intro of who you are, what you're currently doing, and your interest in AI? And let's start with you, Shiko.
Good morning, good afternoon, evening, from wherever you're listening this from. So as you heard, my name is Dr. Shiko Gitau. I'm a Kenyan. When I introduce myself, I don't like introducing myself like using my titles because those are fickle. I feel like my identity and where it's formed is what is important to me. And my primary identity is formed in God and my relationship with Christ. And I know that I am a most beloved daughter of God, and He calls me friend, which is very important. And because of that, God has been faithful. He's opened opportunities and built platforms for me to stand. So I'm currently CEO of Color, and Color is actually a Zulu word, nodding to my South African
that's interesting.
Work, Adingala, which means to start or to spark. And it means when you light up something, sometimes darkness just needs just one spark to light up. And our goal is to catalyze Africa's digital future. And we do this in many ways, using research, using data, and using software engineering and advisory services, and building an entrepreneurship ecosystem. And so it's very, very exciting what we are doing. And over and above that, I am a mom. I have a 7-year-old who wants to be an engineer. He interacts with AI and the computer as you would interact with your small car toy when you are a child. So when I look at him, I look at the future and what the future holds for him. I am a sister, I am a daughter, and as I said, I'm a most beloved daughter of God. So that is Shiko in short. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Shiko. Over to you, JP.
Yes. Hi, my name is JP Harper. I'm South African born, also married with 3 children. And yeah, I'm currently, as you mentioned, I'm currently a lecturer in theology at George Whitfield College. My early studies and training and career were in math and computer science, though. I've really had an AI interest in AI since high school. I heard about artificial neural networks. I tried to apply some of that myself to recognize human handwriting. This was in the late 1990s when there was just this growing interest in it. For quite a few years, I worked for a local company, FlightScope, who built sport radars that are really sold all over the world now, the US being the main market. And we began to apply a lot of machine learning there as well. So I've had a longstanding interest in AI as well. But then also serving in the church. And so I'm trying to bring these two worlds together. Some of my research that I'm working on at the moment is actually applying some of these language models that are used for things like ChatGPT to ancient languages, particularly to studying the Greek of the Bible. So like Shiko as well, I'm a believer in Christ, and that informs everything I do. But yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting discussion. So I'm very excited to be here around the question of AI and the future, and especially as what it means for us as Christians.
Awesome. Thanks, Shiko. Thanks, JP. And so as we kind of dive into this topic, I'm not going to assume that everyone listening is familiar with what's happening, what the landscape is like. And so, JP, can you give us a very brief intro or overview of the current AI landscape for those who are unfamiliar with it?
Sure, I can try and give us a brief sketch of obviously a very large or vast and expanding landscape of AI. I think it's helpful to begin by just putting some definitions on the table. Firstly, the distinction is very important, what's often made between so-called narrow AI and or weak AI, and strong AI or AGI. And so what we mean by narrow or weak AI is AI that's normally geared to performing one particular task, one task often associated with human level intelligence, say playing a game of chess, recognizing your face in video footage, predicting the weather over the next few days, scanning an x-ray of your lungs to detect whether you have lung cancer. These are all examples of what's often called narrow AI. And this, of course, is around us everywhere. Then so the next level, what many are predicting is actually not too far off, and we can maybe have a discussion around that, is what's often called strong AI or AGI, artificial general intelligence, intelligence that much more closely approximates general human intelligence. It has the characteristics like the ability to learn something in one domain and transfer that learning to another domain, the ability to be creative and ultimately to be self-conscious or self-aware. And I think many of the recent advances in generative AI, AI that's actually generating images or text, for example, OpenAI's DALL-E, I don't know if you've experimented with that, you can for free online, where you give it a text prompt and it generates an image based on that. Or of course, ChatGPT, there's been a lot of hype around that, or Google Bard, where it actually generates text that seemed to show a spark of creativity. Many people are sort of saying maybe this is sort of the cusp of artificial general intelligence. Maybe I should just give a brief sketch for our discussion as well. How do these technologies work? And there's a lot of hype around them. If you've played around with something like ChatGPT, there are times at which, I mean, I've certainly experienced it, where you almost feel like you're interacting with another mind. It's got such a powerful command of language. But how does it work behind the scenes? Well, what I find very interesting as a Christian is actually all of these AI systems are basically built in some way. Their architecture imitates biological systems. In some way, it mimics the human mind, which has billions of neurons and trillions of interconnections between those neurons. And the way that we learn is also the same way that these machines are taught and learn. So an example I thought of, you know, I have a young son. How did he learn how to catch a ball? Well, when I throw a ball at him, hundreds of neurons are firing in his brain, and they're causing his body to move and to reach out and to grab that ball. And when he catches that ball, there's a feedback system. There's a big smile on my face, and he has a reward inside him for catching it. And his body releases dopamine, and that strengthens all those connections so that next time he can catch a ball more effectively. And, you know, something like ChatGPT essentially is working in a similar way. All of these systems are trained. They're structured like the human mind. And there's a reward system when essentially what it's trying to do is predict what's the next logical word in the sentence. And it's fed gigabytes or terabytes and terabytes of data of human speech and interaction. And simply what it's trying to do is predict the next word. And it's amazing how something very powerful actually comes out of that. But essentially it's imitating the human mind and human neural networks. That's a brief overview.
Yeah, that's quite fascinating, because I think I remember when the recent hype took off, and you know, over Braze, people would remark on how amazing ChatGTP was, and kind of extrapolating from there how it could do so many things. And the distinction between prediction and being smart is quite interesting. It appeared smart, but actually the underlying technology, all it was doing was trying to predict, obviously very well, but it wasn't being smart. And what came out in the weeks thereafter was all these incidences where it sounded smart, it sounded accurate, but it was factually incorrect, you know, and there were many of those examples. So it's not trying to tell you the truth. It's trying to predict what word should be shared next. And Shikul, you live in Kenya, you've got an ecosystem mandate for your company. Like, what are your experiences with like how AI is developing in Kenya, and your experiences on the ground of ordinary people and how they think about AI and what some of the misconceptions there are?
So I love the introduction that John Paul has given. It's a very good overview of like a single focused AI and AG and the what is called general focused AI. So for me, there's this quote I saw, and I realize how true it is that AI has been with us for a long, long time. We just use it. It now just exists without a user interface. So think about it. When was the first time you used Facebook? I'm not even talking about TikTok, because TikTok is quite obvious. When you started using Facebook, Facebook started recommending friends to you. Remember that? And mm-hmm. say you might know this person. Why? Because you went to this school in about the same years that they went. So you might be able to know each other. That's how you started building your Facebook followership. Yeah. And then on Twitter was you liked this tweet. So maybe this particular speaker is somebody you might actually like because they speak on similar topics and themes. And then you start following this person. And then you start thinking, okay, the internet is listening to me. Because what happens is when you go to Instagram after having a conversation, what do you see? Is a pop-up of something. So you say, you talk about, oh, I need new hair gel. And what do you see in Instagram? An advertisement for hair gel. And most people say, oh, the internet is listening to me. No, it's because the internet has something called cookies that it's been collecting of you over time. So the internet has these cookies that is fed into this, let's call it big machine, because it's very hard to sometimes explain to people how adapis work. And then it organizes that Paul has searched for this, and these are key things that they're looking for. These are the articles they're reading. These are the key interests. So you are a sports buff. You love Manchester United. You do this, and they compare you with other people with similar tendencies. They say, because Paul has done this and John likes this and John likes this, Paul might actually like this. So this thing has been with us forever, like forever. As John Paul was talking about, neural networks have been with us forever. Everybody has been experimenting with it. So we need to make peace that AI is not a new thing. And I think that is the most important thing is, guys, it is not a 2020, 2021 fad. It's been with us for a long time. It's just right now, it's just unmasked, basically. It's removed. It's moved from the hiding. It's there with us. We have to interact with it directly.
And I think that's key. Like what's quite clear is the ability to engage with it directly and start manipulating it or seeing the direct route. It reminds me of that. I think it was definitely real. I just can't remember if it was in the UK or the US and what the actual result was. But a teenager shopping at Tesco or some large retailer, based on what she had picked up, they figured out she was pregnant and started sending pregnancy related advertising, because those products usually, if you buy them in that combination, starts indicating that you are trending towards pregnancy. And again, just kind of pointing at not suggestion, but what you've been saying about it's always been there. It's been there for a long time. Retailers and all these big companies are using a lot of these tooling to get us to buy things or whatever they want us to do. But now it's front and center and we're able to engage with it directly. Let's stick with you, Shikul, and kind of move into I know Africa is a big continent, lots of countries. I'm assuming you've traveled quite a bit and are familiar with what's happening in Eastern Africa. But how is Africa engaging with AI or with the rapid evolution in AI? Is it reaping the same benefits at the moment? Is it facing the same current set of threats? What's the status quo in Africa at the moment?
So there are two schools of thoughts within Africa, and especially within the Christian circles, is first of all, the big one is and the most persistent one is AI is a devil. This is the beginning of 666, you know, that the Antichrist and all of that. It is, we are in a place where we cannot be able to manage this place. This is the beginning of the end because AI is going to take over the world and going to push this. And there's some truths to that. There's a lot of misinformation that is going to come through AI because, as John was saying, it speaks very authoritatively to influence based on other people's thoughts process. So that's one school of thought, is that AI is taking over the world and because of just the lack of understanding. Yeah. On the other hand, what is the status quo of AI in Africa? We are still not there. And I feel like next week I'll be at UNGA, the United Nations General Assembly, and I'll be speaking about this, is that while everybody's talking about AI and ethics of AI and use of AI, abuse of AI, Africa is not contributing to any of these conversations because there's not enough data from and on Africa to actually make any form of inference on or interest. So for me, that is very important.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Shiko. I just remember a conversation some information you shared with us at our previous discussion around how, you know, AI, as JP put it out, needs to be trained. And where is that training happening? Where is the data coming from? And, you know, I suppose to some extent you can call it the underbelly of AI. Someone's got to do the dirty work. And you mentioned that there's a rising need in Africa for young people digitally savvy to assist with this data labeling. What are your thoughts on that and what's happening there?
We are in a place where we all wanted to be. When I started working in this space, I started working in the very early days of the internet where we were all pushing for user-generated content, not content that was just being posted by a leader or an official on the internet. And we are in the heart of user-generated content. TikTok generates, I'm not sure, I mean, has what, half a million, creates half a million minutes per second of data. Everybody's always posting. Every single second, somebody's posting something. That we are in the heart of it. We are in the pinnacle of what user-generated content. What that has done to the internet is it's allowed people to post anything. To keep the internet clean, somebody has to do it. And this is where the human part actually comes. AI cannot do this. The AI cannot say this image is pornographic or violent or disgusting, or it is pushing for child abuse. All these are things that are inbuilt and baked in us as human beings. We know what is pain and what is not pain, what is good and what is not good. So it's humans who have to go through these thousands of contents, millions actually, it's not even thousands. It's millions of content to just be able to flag what content is not humanly acceptable. Let's put it that way. And that means it exposes a lot of young people who are doing this work to stuff that is evil, for lack of a better word, because I think it's just beyond evil. And this is being done by young people across the world. We've seen cases from Europe to Asia to the US, and now it's in Africa. Yeah, so there's need to protect the minds of our young people working on the internet, because it is us who are generating, and we have to take a collective responsibility as humanity for generating this horrible content. Somebody has to be able to be the cleaner, the guys who clean, the janitor of the internet. And we have to be able to protect the janitors of the internet by protecting them. AI is doing some of it, but we need to be able to be trained, and they're training the internet, AIs to do this. but the human part of it has to be protected. There are many, like my country, that we are putting measures in place to be able to put mental health protections around these young people. We need to keep the people who are generating, who are giving them these jobs, accountable to protecting them. But this is the reality of our lives, is that we need these janitors of the internet, but we need to also protect them to make sure that they're not being infected by what they're seeing on a daily basis. So I think I mentioned earlier that most of the of AI as we know it today, the corpus of data that is training most of the large language models is not African, not informed by African, and it's very Western leaning, which is, I mean, to be fair, it's not fair, but it is what it is. But I think for me, the big one is that most of the training is happening in Africa. So as an African who is excited about the digital space and the ability of the digital space to create employment, this is very exciting for me, because the AI company is actually employing young African people to actually train data. But the data is being trained based on a preset set of instructions and understanding and a mental model that is very Western, leaving out what these young people would actually bring to the table as young Africans with lived in experience in Africa. So that is a conversation we must have. On one hand, it's good. It's creating employment, young people in Kenya and Africa actually getting jobs. It's very exciting. And when you meet young people who are working in this space, it's really super exciting. But on the other hand, we need to see how else do we stretch this capacity of these young people to start training it for Africa and to make sure that Africa is being represented in this AI revolution and next generation quote unquote industrialization that is going to be driven by AI. And that is an open question that needs to be posed to the people who are makers of these AI models and even African LLM builders, because there's like a few people who are popping up across Africa and groups that are popping up across Africa that are trying to influence the movement, but they're just so small to be able to have that discourse at a global level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite a challenge, because I think many African countries are still kind of getting the basics right, just basic infrastructure, food security, governments, and all of that. But then there's this massive AI surge that's taking place where we need voices, many voices around the table. But because many African countries are still working on the basics, can they be represented? Do they have the resources, the people that know enough to be able to contribute before, you know, the table stakes get set for how AI actually works? That's fascinating. So when you speak about AI to people, I think you find that there's probably very stark contrasting opinions. On the one hand, a very optimistic view of how we're all going to stop working at some point and kind of enjoy a leisure for the rest of our lives. And on the other hand, you've got a very pessimistic view that AI is going to take over the world, destroy all jobs, and so on and so forth. But before we kind of explore kind of the negative side and what we can do in anticipation of that, I'd love for us as Christians to maybe spend a bit of time thinking about what we can celebrate about AI. And let's start with you, JB. What are some of the exciting things that we can celebrate about AI in this space? And then over to Shiko.
Yeah, sure. I think there are great many things we can celebrate. You know, I would often go back to the creation mandate, back to Genesis 1, where God gives humanity that task to cultivate his world. You know, he puts Adam and Eve in the garden to work it, to rearrange the raw materials there for human flourishing. And, you know, I really think that implicit in that mandate is really the call to develop tools that will help us in that task. And I really think that AI is one of those tools that we can use, as Shiko has already been saying, to enhance our to cultivate God's world. There's a famous media theorist, philosopher by the name of Marshall McLuhan, and he argued that all human technology, in a sense, enhances our ability to do something that we already do naturally. You know, so we dig naturally, but a spade makes that so much easier. A plow makes it even easier. that we can plant more and we can yield more fruit ultimately. And AI is a tool like that. You know, a doctor can look at an x-ray and see whether, you know, you have cancer or an MRI scan. But now you can feed hundreds or thousands of scans to an AI system that can quickly identify which ones need to be looked at further and just enable the doctor to see so many more patients per day. So I think we're going to see advances in the medical field, developing new drugs, early detection of diseases. In education, I think something like ChatGPT can be a wonderful tool there for doing research. In business, more efficient processes to give better value to customers. You know, in transport, improved traffic control, AI-assisted accident prevention, self-driving cars. There's just so many different areas, I think, that could potentially be, human life could be improved in so many different areas. There's a few.
So, and in your world, your day-to-day, what's the one exciting area that you'd love to see significant progress on because it's such a pain in your life at the moment?
Well, I mean, I must say I'm doing a little bit of work on studying ancient texts. I mean, that's really what you do in biblical studies or as a theologian. And, you know, something that you're interested in studying ancient texts is, you know, what is the relationship of one text to another text? Where is this author getting their ideas from? And language models are a very useful tool for assessing that and also assessing certain surprises in language. You know, why did this author choose to use a particular word right here and at this point or a particular tense of this verb? And so I'm busy working on that at the moment, and I'm really enjoying that. And I think it's going to yield some very interesting fruit. I'm hoping to publish out of it eventually. So that's in my life what I'm enjoying at the moment, and where I think a lot of value will be added to classical studies generally, but to biblical studies particularly.
That's a very interesting perspective. As the world increases in the volume of knowledge being created, and humans are still kind of stuck with their reading speed and their listening speed and their viewing speed, we're going to need more tools because at some point there's just too much knowledge to be able to wade through. And what you're saying is you're now starting to use some of this tooling to wade much more quickly through a lot of these ancient texts and create links that, you know, you could have done in the past, but it would have been way more painful to get there.
Exactly.
Shiko, over to you.
I've worked in technology in Africa from its very early days. Okay, not very early days. Like when I started working was like the very early days of the internet, where there like very little use of the internet, especially on the mobile phone in Africa. And there's always resistance around it. And there's always a single connotation around. So I remember when I joined Google, for example, and somebody said, oh, you're working for Google. You know, Google is going to be the Antichrist. But I have this verse in the Bible that and when God created everything, it was good. And I believe we are created in the image of God. And AI is good. I start from that premise. The fact that sin came to the world and there is evil is what we should be able to think about from that point of view. So I celebrate this knowledge because it is an ability that God has given all of us to be able to occupy until he comes, right? So let's start with that. Let's start with that. It is a good thing. It is helping in so many ways. When I think about some of the use cases, I mean, he's spoken about the ancient ancient text. There's a, for example, at work, we are looking at how do we quickly diagnose diseases using AI. Literally, this like he said, ancient text, where did this appear? Where is has this particular symptom or disease symptom pattern been seen anywhere else? And what was the diagnosis at that time? Yeah. And this makes medical care, healthcare, quite scalable across Africa, because we don't have enough doctors. Let's start with that. What now we will have is mobile devices that people can actually be able to take photos of their diseases or type in their symptoms and get a rough diagnosis of what is happening to them, saving lives in a literal sense. Yeah. Education is my favorite. I always say I am I'm one of those people, by the grace of God, who education for me was what is it called? Was a defining factor, and it flattened the world for me. Yeah. And now quality education is actually available to young people. The internet avails that. But what the AI does, it helps define for you a path that you can actually optimize on as a young person. I want to be able to do this. Here is information. This is how I can optimize on myself and my strength, optimize my time, do this. So education is being optimized by this. Here is the right information. I don't have to go and dig in a library to do things. I can be able to access the quality and standard information that any child in the world can be able to do it. Yeah. And for me, the most important in the one is that, so I mentioned I have a 7-year-old, and he's always interacting with AI, especially voice-based AI. Google Assistant is his favorite friend, because he's always asking Google some random questions. Yeah. So it is just the ability to access information in a manner that everybody can understand. My hope is that we can be able to do it in a language that everybody can understand. That is my novella moment. That is like if you're able to get it. Like my son is 7 and he's able to ask, "Hi Google, who was Noah? Why was he swallowed by a fish?" And because AI is able to go around the internet and find information and extract information about Noah and why he was swallowed by a fish, or what fish. In fact, the last one he was asking, what fish swallowed Noah? And those are questions that you as a child, you had a question, but you didn't know how to get that information. But because the AI is saying, okay, for somebody to be swallowed by a fish and be alive, this is the kind of fish that could actually swallow them. Is something that it's breaking down knowledge in a way that everybody can understand. I wish to be able to be break it down in a language that everybody can understand. That is where I'm hoping that these discussions that we are having, not just here but everywhere, can push to that everybody in a language that everybody can understand. But that is what AI is doing. So I'm celebrating it in that sense, and I'm giving examples in that sense. To be
Right, yeah,
honest,
that's
and to be
yeah.
truthful, Africa has a long way to go and needs every effort of every one person to actually get us there. But we have to start celebrating. We can't just put you on the side and wait until somebody else is doing it for us.
Sure. So I saw some interesting comments to make. Firstly, if this accessing knowledge thing was universal. In your son's case, it would probably start off by saying, "Did you mean Jonah and not Noah?" Right? Because hopefully, it would
Yes.
be tracking accuracy as well, and it would say it's actually not Noah; it's actually Jonah, and then continue with the question. So, also helpfully correcting someone's wrong question in the process and educating them—that would be fantastic. But to your point, earlier on in the process, early on in the questions. I think you made a helpful point, which is relevant now, which is your son is engaging in English. At what point will someone in their home language in any African country or any Asian country be able to engage as freely as an English speaker? And knowing some of the language teaching tools out there like Duolingo, there's still so many language. I mean, we've just scratched the surface of being able to allow someone to speak in their home language. So if AI can kind of push the envelope on that, that would be fantastic. Out of interest, medical use cases have come up with both of you. I came across two that was fascinating yesterday in a meeting with a client. He mentioned that one of the insurance companies, the Life One, recently launched an app where you can get your life insurance quote done by taking a picture of your face, and it will pick up certain biomarkers for longevity, and then give you an insurance quote that is relevant to your health. Oh, that was just—I didn't know that was possible, but
That is
clearly it
possible.
is.
So they're extending what is already there. So right now, so I was talking to somebody this week about just, so we have one of our partner startups in our company is doing this amazing product where they're installing a small tool, a small gadget in your car. And you can literally pay as you go on your car insurance. And your premium is based on how you drove the last time. So if you braked instantly, if you did this instantly, it just predicts how bad of a driver you are or how good your driver, and then your premium will be determined by just how well you drove the last time. And so I was discussing this with somebody, and they told me, you know, in the US they are doing all sorts of things in terms of, like, it's not just the mechanical part of it that they are using to feed into these insurance claims, but also like the environmental aspects of it. Did you decide to drive in the middle of the rain? Why? Like, they're taking pictures, your facial expression, and they're using this to feed what, I mean, what, how you're going to be premiumed on the on your next cover. And it's very interesting seeing it's being used everywhere. I don't know if you've seen this. I mean, oh, you heard there's like a clip that was going around that was saying that you order, like, you call an order for a McDonald's, and it tells you, but my doctor told me this, but my doctor, your doctor told this, or are you sure you want to do this? And yes, we are going to get there at some point, but with all these protections in terms of law, it might be, I mean, held back. Thank you.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of leading into the next question and just prefacing that by, that example that you raised there, that's not a technology question. That's a question of ethics. That's a question of regulation. That's a question of individual privacy. Is the McDonald's app allowed to infer that you are not doing well healthily and suggest that you shouldn't be eating it, right? If another human being did that, there would be some angry remarks that, what is it your business to tell me what I can eat or not, right? So it becomes a fascinating discussion. And even the medical example that I brought up takes a picture of a person's face and infers, what if the training data was used incorrectly and a farmer's weather-beaten face, in my context, means poor lifespan, but in a farming context, actually, he's going to be way older than me, but now he gets an unfair rate because the training data was incorrect. So I think what I'm trying to get to is, like, what are some of the dangers that we should be concerned about as we see AI develop? JP, maybe you can have a go first and then over to Shiko.
Sure. Yeah. So I think you're quite right to highlight that there are many concerns, and obviously people who are discussing these things are raising these all the time. I often hear people in the discussions sort of talking about the dangers of autonomous weapon systems, particularly that going wrong. So increasingly weapons becoming more sophisticated and being set free with a particular target. But like you said, sometimes these machine learning applications can go into a new context, which is never seen before, and you don't really know what's going to happen in that space and who's it going to start targeting, designing new toxins for chemical warfare, that type of thing. There's a lot of concern around the use of AI by authoritarian regimes to track your every move. This is the kind of 1984, the Big Brother scenario. Increasing government control because they know exactly what you're doing, where you are all the time. Then on the other hand, there's also sort of manipulating people for profit, social networking algorithms. Shiko was speaking about that earlier. I guess this is a more like the Brave New World type of scenario. People just being given not what they really need, but what they want. And this is a big danger as well. Just feeding people, you think of something like pornography. It's just constantly being fed across the internet because, even though it's not good, and there's many studies that show that, it still continues to spread throughout the internet. Then fraudsters, people impersonating you, to get something from you, stealing your identity, that type of thing. And then also, I think just simply making people lazy, no longer putting in that hard work. So ChatGPT can be a wonderful tool for doing research and so on, but it can make you lazy. You can just ask it to write you the poem you have to write or the essay you have to write. So yeah, those are a few of the dangers that I would highlight, and those are already with us. I mean, this is sort of narrow AI. Of course, one could go more broadly and sort of ask the question about artificial general intelligence, a super intelligence, would it have a motivation for keeping human beings on the planet, and would it eventually want to wipe human beings out? And you know, there are some people raising those concerns. I actually saw the latest Time magazine article is actually on well, the cover is on Elon Musk and his concern about the future of AI. And there are lots of prominent people, Max Tegmark at MIT and others like him, who are raising concerns like these.
Oh, it's, yeah, I mean, it was so exciting to hear the stuff that's cool. And then now this side of the conversation, those are some hard problems to navigate through. Shiko, your perspective on some of the things that we should be concerned about?
So I love some of the example he's given. For me, the big one is the misinformation. Yeah. With deep fakes and quote unquote authoritative voices continuously rising and being unable to differentiate what is real and what is made up and what is in the middle. Because the stuff that is actually real but but some of it is made up is my biggest concern. Especially where fact checking nowadays is defined as an opinion. That is their opinion. It's no longer a fact is no longer a fact. It's an alternative opinion. So that's my biggest worry, because with a world that is continuously, as we say it, generating new knowledge, generating new content, generating new information, some truths will be buried for good. Who is going to be the defender of the truth? Yeah. And that is usually my like when I think about AI is my biggest worry, both from my faith perspective and my African perspective. There is stuff that is oral, that was passed from one generation to the other, that will completely disappear, because what is going to be found on the internet is something that is completely made up, and it was made up to a place of reality that you'll be not knowing the truth or the lie. So there's this, I don't know if there's this movie on Netflix, I can't remember the name now, where they are like different versions of reality, and each reality looks as real, and to the person living, each new version of the AI feels as real to the person who is experiencing it as the previous one, until the original person breaks the they are calling the core, the database of all this information. All these other people were living a fake life because they have been made to believe that this is their life. And my worry is that I'd be driving ourselves there, not in our physical sense, but in our brains, because of the information that we are consuming, especially for this continent, where the only information that we know of is what is fed to us. We are not originating information ourselves. And that is my biggest worry, to be totally honest. And from a Christian perspective, there's some deep truths about Christianity that if we don't aggressively, and I'm using the word aggressively because it's biblical in this sense, is that the violence shall take it by force, is we are going to be totally buried out by counter-Christianism or pseudo-Christianism that is going to be giving alternative truths to what is in the word of God. And that for me is honestly, it's like critical risk, even as we speak all these other things. I feel like a measle being dumped on earth, or somebody using AI to do to manipulate machines and track people, is a second level threat than what is going to be happening to our brains, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to continue on that thread. I was watching a documentary, South Korean documentary, on the youth gambling / investment problem that's taking place. When I say youth, it's actually not youth as we know it, but 20s and 30s. Wages are stagnant in Korea. The path to financial prosperity, and along with that, in a country like South Korea, is having a family and all of those things is very, very dark at the moment. And so the youth are turning to these very easy to use, almost gamified investment apps, crypto apps. And what they're seeing is this desire for convenience or speed to wealth is bankrupting the youth. I think, if I remember the stat correctly, 54% of bankruptcies last year, 2022 or 2021, was declared by people between the ages of 20 and 30. I mean, that's a crazy stat if you think about it, right? And so I thought that was crazy. And then an economist that they interviewed made a remark which completely blew my mind is, this is the next generation coming into power, coming into strength in society. What do we do when the majority of our youth has only learned to conveniently try and escalate wealth through shortcuts? Mm. What does that do to population? Now, to extend what your fears are into kind of other aspects of what it means to be a human, convenient relationships, convenient work, and convenient attention. TikTok, the impact of TikTok on this 10-second clips has impacted the whole entire entertainment industry because no one's got the attention span to watch longer stuff, longer movies anymore. So our youth are growing up with attention deficit, very superficial relational capabilities. And if they move over to AI chatbots, that gets exaggerated. It might be easier for them in the moment in whatever situation they sit themselves with, they sit in. But then, you know, and then work, to JP's point earlier, you know, they're just using AI to generate work. And so, like, what real work have they actually been doing? They've just been taking shortcuts all their life because they've pursued convenience in every aspect. That is a frightening society that we may live in. I don't want to leave it there. Let's kind of move on to then how we would look at this more critically from a Christian perspective. So at Zawani, we like to look at these things using the DDR framework. For those of you who are long-time listeners, you may have come across it in other episodes or other podcast episodes. So design, what was God's original design for something? And then Shiko, I think you proposed that it was, you know, these things are good. Andy Krauss wrote a fascinating book, his most recent one, about technology, and he differentiates between I think it's instruments and superpowers, if I remember correctly. I'm getting the terminology wrong. But it's almost like our old way of learning through books or whatever other mechanisms we used left us with empowerment because it wasn't convenient to re-engage with the book. But these new tools that we're building for ourselves, it's so easy and convenient. It actually creates a mode of dependency instead. It doesn't actually empower us to do the thinking ourselves. It actually more points to rather come here again because it's so easy for me to do the work for you. Now, obviously, there's some people, and I think that's a tiny portion, that can be empowered by these tools. But the rest, I think we're just lazy at heart and we just become dependent on it. So when Google isn't available, the internet is off, load shedding, the towers are down, we don't know how to answer anything because we normally would turn to Google to answer a question. JP, I don't know if you want to...
That was the primary premise of the internet. There's a great book called Hooked. It teaches design of technologies, and the one thing you build for is endorphins. Always come back for endorphins. Always come back for endorphins, and that's what the internet is about, and AI and everything in technology is built about. Yeah.
I think that was NeurAI, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so JP. I don't know if you want to riff on that, but kind of moving on to the DDR framework. At Zawani, we like to look at things using what we call the DDR framework: design, what was God's original design for something; distortion, how did sin distort that thing; and redemption, how can we begin to use that thing in the way God originally intended? How do we redeem it? But I don't think we've got a precedent for AI, or do we? In your opinion, is there a redemptive purpose, or can there be a redemptive purpose for something as significant and as overwhelming as AI?
Yeah, I think that's quite a difficult question, and we've already begun to raise many of the issues around it. Again, my perspective is AI is a tool that we've developed, and like other tools, that it can be used to the glory of God to bring healing, you know, to alleviate suffering. And we've begun to think a little bit about what that redemptive purpose might be. I do think we need to, just following on from the previous discussion, be very good at setting limits. So in the educational space, for example, at our college where I teach right now, we're we're talking about, how do we expect students to use something like ChatGPT in their assignments? And so we are going to have to set boundaries and to set limits in wise ways, with my own children as well. We're strict on screen time. I think there are many, many spheres in which we're going to need to think those questions through very carefully. I think, again, as Christians, we need to also steer away. And I think from discussion right now, it's really clear that we're aren't heading in that direction. But there are some who still sort of harbor a type of transhumanist dream, this idea that AI is going to solve all of our problems. We're going to reach a singularity or some glorious future where we create a super intelligence that's going to solve all of our problems for us. I think we need to be very careful of idolizing the technology. I think history has shown time and time again that when we do that, that it becomes very dangerous. If we take any created thing and we say that that is going to be our savior, that's going to solve all of our problems, it actually becomes very oppressive. It actually ends up disempowering us or dehumanizing us. C.S. Lewis pointed out long ago that often it's some of the greatest tyrannies are often put forward in the name of a greater good. So if I really think that, my AI or my language model is going to solve all of humanity's problems, then I end up justifying bending all kinds of rules and so on. So I think we need to be very careful of that. And we do need to set limits. And I think Christians also need to be involved in, making AI a safer space. AI safety research, we should be interested in that. And also just setting policies, right in our own homes, from the way our children engage with it to whatever our levels of influence are, whether it's in an educational institution or right up to policy level, which I think Shiko's more involved in, government policy and so on. We need to be thinking about those things so that AI is a redemptive tool rather than something that becomes oppressive and that we look to as our savior.
So two comments before we move on to Shiko there on the same question. Some of the language you used around transhumanism and their desires or what they're wanting to achieve through transhumanism kind of reminds me of the episode or two that we did on new creation in the Monday Christian series. It's like these desires are there because we probably are built for that, eternity. Living ever after in a perfect society. But now, instead of looking to God and Jesus for that, we're looking at technology, and in this case, AI, to do that for us. And so even though we've got the same desires, the sinful man looks to his own tools and his own creations to pursue that which only God can give us. And the second one, I suppose I'm a little bit more pessimistic about AI. It's kind of based on a comment that John Lennox made in his interview a couple of months ago, I think. He was saying the rate of change, specifically in AI, or the improvements in AI, is too fast for the rate of change of the ethical foundation on top of which it sits. And if that is the case, we have a huge disaster coming our way, that governments by nature who are slow moving, any kind of centralization efforts, are much slower moving than independent lab developing its own AI at whatever speed for whatever purpose it wants. Like, it's so fast, and I'm concerned about that. But anyway, moving over to Shiko.
So, I mean, you say, what is the precedence for AI when we think about the world? And I mean, it takes me back maybe 2007, 2008. I'm sure you know about the YouVersion, the Bible app. And when you hear Life Church and how they speak about that moment, I feel like we're in that moment right now. Yeah, when the Bible says that and the gospel shall be preached around the world, in every language to every tribe, and at When many people would think about that even less than 30 or 40 years ago, where before the internet became persistent, people would think, what does that actually mean? Yeah. 2 days ago, I saw a post that YouVersion was celebrating its 10 years. And To be honest, they were saying they have translated the Bible into 2,000 languages. Like, that is phenomenal. And it has more than what, a billion downloads. When you think about that, those are huge numbers. And for me, that is a great precedence in terms of redemption, is that this tool that was used first by academics, then by human rights people, then by governments, is being used to literally fulfill the Great Commission. And when I think about it, actually the in every language part of it is 2,000 languages is quite phenomenal. It not have been done were it not for this great tool that we call the internet. If we posture ourselves around that, is how else can we be able to do this? What are challenges that people are facing? What are conversations with God that people are facing that they can easily debunk or easily articulate because they're able to work out their thought process through an AI app or model or something? What are those things that can be done? And that is from just a purely Christian point of view. But more than that, because the world is of God's and everything in it is, where else can this great tool be used to relieve the pain of the world? You know, what is that? What, thinking about the great mandate and the great commission, how do we apply this tool at scale? And I'm sure one day in the next decade, AI will be persistent again to even my grandmother. Yeah. Is how do we make it that persistent and work through it to fulfilling that great mandate, the Great Commission? And using that Bible app YouVersion idea, is how do we get it there? Is that how do we make sure that the gospel, the good news, and when I talk about the good news, it's not just the Bible itself, the book, it's the good news of hope to the world, relief of pain, speaking to the downtrodden and the poor and the widow. How do we get it to that place, and how do you apply it? So anyway, you're saying you are pessimistic. I'm a pure optimistic when it comes to AI. I mean, like, I am fully bullish that AI has some great aspects. It needs some guardrails. We have to be very clear of that. We need to put some guardrails around it. But I wouldn't stop. I'll just say, let's just continue and explore where it's taking us. Let us not step back and say we cannot get involved in building this or in contributing to this. That would be not a very wise decision. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, as you guys, I mean, I have the privilege of engaging with you guys on this topic in real time. And I'm riffing and I'm hearing what you guys are saying. And I just, like, a friend of mine shared with me the other day, and it must have been this week or last week, that you can now speak to Jesus and speak to
Exactly.
Satan, and you can get their thoughts on matters, right? And as amazing as that sounds, it just reminds me what, JP was saying about how he was using AI. If it's so convenient to speak to Jesus directly, why would you ever open your Bible, right? If your starting point was, oh, your introduction was to speaking to Jesus. And my concern is speaking to Jesus through AI is not scripture. And at some point, if you replace speaking to Jesus with God's word, I think that's not a good place to end up as a society, as a nation of Christians, or as a kingdom of Christians. But anyway, so I mean, I hear some of the benefits that you're mentioning, but even behind each one of these benefits, you're like wondering, oh, what's the unintended secondary consequence of having this benefit? And the other train of thought that I'm starting to be in my head is becoming more and more clear. AI is used as a tool is fantastic. I think the word tool is also what, or instrument is what Andy Crouch was pointing out. So where I stand towards the end of this podcast series is, any tool or any AI in this case, if it helps us become more human, the application thereof, that's fantastic. But if it's helping us become superhuman, that's a recipe for disaster. And so for me, that's the distinction. Do we want to become superhumans with the use of these tools? That's probably going to end up in a very bad place. But if it's going to restore our humanity, in the brokenness that we have, then I think there's a strong case for being bullish on AI. But that obviously then becomes a religious question of religion or theology. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be superhuman? And all of those questions, which the technology, AI in itself cannot question. It's the people using it that have to debate and deliberate how to figure these things out.
But Manu, cool. At the beginning of the conversation we're talking about, yes, AI makes mistakes, but I feel like humans have a knack of making like ultimate mistakes that AI cannot replicate. But also humans have a sense of responsibility. And I mean, over the past few weeks, and I've been thinking about this podcast, I've been thinking, what differentiates us from AI? It's not choice. It's a sense of responsibility. To be totally honest, it has nothing to do with choice, because AI can make better choices than us, but it's a consciousness of responsibility that God has given us all. You know, and the Bible says in Genesis, after the creation, and said and told Adam that, here, occupy, fill the earth and multiply. That was a sense of responsibility to care for the world. It is a sense of responsibility to replicate and scale themselves, but also care. That is, because you cannot replicate yourself without caring. The idea of naming animals is about care. That responsibility that was given to us as humans by God is something AI will never be able to replicate at all. And for me, that is what differentiates us from any machine model. The machine model will never feel responsible for X. They might fake choice, but they'll never fake responsibility. And that is a beautiful thing that God gave us.
So, I mean, that's a big statement to make. And JP, do you want to maybe tackle that question as well? Like, what differentiates us from AI, assuming all the advances that they predict with AI come to fruition? Like, you were speaking earlier about having its own conscience, right? I think that was what you mentioned. Like, what does it mean to be made in the image of God then? What differentiates us from a AGI to 3 decades down the line?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think lots of people are saying, is being human, are we really just large language model?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think that's a philosophical question, and it comes back to, how you view human uniqueness. You mentioned the image of God there. I think that's a very important aspect of the biblical teaching. It's obviously been debated a lot over the centuries. The early church were quite influenced by Greek philosophy, leaders like St. Augustine, and they tended to identify the image of God primarily as our rational capability or our capacity to reason. That's what really set us apart from the rest of the created order, from the rest of the creatures. And there's obviously a great truth in that. We far outshine all the other creatures in terms of our ability to reason. But I think that's also a limiting view of the image of God. More recently, theologians have drawn attention more to the social aspect and the capacity for relationships, because of course the biblical text says that human beings, male and female, were created together in the image of God. And so there's this very important relational capacity and capacity for forming deep connections with others and ultimately with God himself, spirituality. And so, to be in the image of God in terms of the Bible's teaching is, I think, really at its heart, is firstly to reflect God and who he is in himself, which includes, of course, rationality, relationality, but then also morality, sense of right and wrong. Also creativity, just as God is creator, we reflect that in some ways. But then also, as Shika was saying as well, the call not only to reflect God, but to represent him in the world, and to represent his just and his gracious rule over the world. All of those nexus of ideas come together in the image of God. And so, something like ChatGPT, these language models can in a sense mimic human speech, but ultimately it's, as a Christian, it's God's word that constitutes reality. It's God who says that we are valuable, that we're created in his image. That is what reality is. And we're valuable for that reason. So I think we need to be careful of sort of trying to identify a particular capacity, like say our capacity to reason. That's what makes us valuable. Because what about those whose reasoning is in some way impaired, either by birth or through injury? Are they less human? And so, the human being in our totality is the image of God, and that's what sets us apart. And ultimately, I need to accept that that's what God says. I'm not going to be able to prove that to you empirically, but it rings true in my experience as well. So I would say something to that effect.
Cool. So let's move on to the final question. But actually, as a host, I get to throw things in there just for the fun of it. But as JP was speaking about this, I remember reading an author on the image of God for something else I was doing. And he made a really cool point, which is there's probably a reason why God's word doesn't articulate A to Z of what it means, the image of God. There's a mysteriousness that he's left there. A depth that he's left there that we shouldn't traverse because it would be bad for us. And so, yes, what's going to happen over time as AI moves closer to AGI and maybe even get there, we're going to question more and more what it means to be human. And the evolutionists will say, AGI is maybe an extension of us. This is the next generation of humankind. And Christians will sit with this made in the image of God as an answer, but the answer requires a lot of chewing in order to get to some sort of understanding of what it means to be an image of God. The second one was, for those of you who are interested in this topic, you would have probably seen the documentary on AlphaGo called AlphaGo in 2017, 2018, where for the first time a machine was able to beat a human being at the game of Go. I know, JP, you're quite an avid, or used to be an avid player, and it's significantly harder to do than beat a human at chess, just because of the unlimited permutations of how the game could go. But anyway, AlphaGo, built by a company called DeepMind, beat a human 4.5-half, if I remember correctly, or was it 3.5, 1.5, but conclusively won that series. But what I remember as an interesting remark after the game, someone made, was that human being was operating on 50 watts of energy. And that machine that was built, that AlphaGo had to operate on, was in the thousands of kilowatts, pulling all that energy to beat the human being. And there's something also in the efficiency of God's design that is good. Like, I think as humans, we'll never get to the same efficiency of God's reference designs that he's given us in animals and plants. There's something beautiful about that. Cool. Last question. Let's get a little bit more practical. And it's close to both of you. Is there a role for Christian leaders and organizations to play with regard to the AI community, the promotion of ethical development and use of AI technology, and advocating for policies that reflect Christian values in this area? And maybe Shiko, you can go first, and then JP can end off for us.
Honestly, if we just sit back and wait, we will regret it as a Christian community and a group of Christians. If we just wait for it to be defined by anybody else. As I mentioned, the biggest threat of AI is none of these things. The one thing is the misinformation, what it's going to do in our heads. And if we don't catch that quickly, we'll regret it. We will look back and be wondering what happened to the very fabric of what the Christian faith is about, And, there are many instances in the Bible where the mind has been used as a tool for good and evil, and idle minds is, I mean, I know, I'm sure that that's only the Bible. An idle mind is a devil's workshop, is something that has been said to us over and over again. But an idle internet corpus of information with no input from the Christianity is going to be the devil's workshop. So we need to be actively having this conversation. What does ethical AI actually mean? Who defines ethic? Yeah. What is that line that defines ethic and non ethic, and how do we view these from a Christian lens? What data is informing, as you're saying, we can now talk to Jesus or through ChatGPT and Bard, is who defined Jesus? Is it the internet? Are we influencing that? And because other people are influencing it, we are training the models every day. Is there a group of Christian LLM designers out there trying to actually create one that is going to help move the gospel forward? So for me, those are the questions that we need to be actively doing, that we need to be on the table. We cannot wait other people to define that. And that is from both, I mean, as I speak very passionately from like an African and Christian perspective, is we need to be at the table defining and contributing, not just listening, but contributing some of these conversations and bring a perspective that is going at the end of it to bring the word of God and healing to the world. Because that's what the world needs, using some of these tools.
Cool. Thank you, Chico. JP, last words?
Yeah, I love what Chico was saying there. In the end, you know, I think it is Andy Crouch who says, you know, Christians have been very good at critiquing culture and sort of complaining about everything that's wrong in the culture instead of actually helping to shape that culture, which is, of course, the human task. And so, yeah, I mean, in terms of what Christian leaders can do, I think firstly, just inform yourself at a basic level, try to understand these technologies, particularly the generative AI. They're great explanations online. So just understand how these work, understand their tendencies as well, and to see how the people will tend to use them. So, of course, as we've been saying, for the last while, there's so many ways in which these tools can be used to make us more efficient and more productive, better at what we do. So explore those ways. You know, I'm a software developer, and ChatGPT and GitHub Copilot, all of these are very helpful AI tools for helping you code, make you more effective. The CEO at the company where I worked for many years, recently sort of did a workshop with the whole company where we went through and we actually did some peer sharing and learning of how we use these tools in our space. So I think do that. How can these tools be used? But then also, how can these tools be misused? Inform ourselves about that as well. And, you know, there are examples of lawyers recently being caught out. They tried to take a shortcut and use ChatGPT to write some of their judgments, and ChatGPT just made up some cases which didn't exist, and they were caught out on that. Oh, so be aware of how these tools get misused as well. And then also, yeah, as Chico was saying, just encourage Christians to be at the forefront of some of this research and some of the AI safety research as well. You know, those would be a few pointers.
Cool. So kind of closing comments before we end off the podcast. Thank you very much for your time. It's been fascinating. And it's clearly still a space that is evolving, lots of moving parts. And it's going to be interesting to reflect on our discussion maybe in a year or 2 years' time, in a decade's time, to see how things have moved. But I think the age-old questions still remain the same. And if anything, the evolution of AI is going to expose questions like, what does it mean to be human? I think back to, you know, Adam and Eve in the garden. They were probably completely unaware of what they were capable of down the line, you know, something like writing software. Would that have been in the imagination of Adam's mind when he was, you know, naming the animals? The ability to play piano like we do these days and at such a young age, would that have been in the realm of his imagination? And so these tools that we build definitely bring out more and more of what it means to be human. But I think AI is a distinct enough juxtaposition that we have to start questioning what it means to be human, because a lot of what it seems to be human can be replicated. Anyway, so thank you very much for your time, JP, Chico. A lot of fun, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partner together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. Ziwani is a Mergon initiative. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ziwani.com.